tone and the format of the show as it's going.
So you've been doing a podcast for 4 years?
4 years.
What's the podcast?
It's me and my friend Sean. So it's Will Sean Podcast?
Will Sean
Podcast? Like it's podcast? A question.
Okay.
But it's our names. It's stupid. We're not good at coming up with titles.
All right.
So we've been doing it every week.
Every week.
Every week for 4 years, like for psychos. I mean, occasionally we'll take a week off, like at Christmas or something.
And so what have you learned? Now, 4 years of a podcast, like that's a real commitment. Have you learned some valuable lessons, either about yourself or your partner or the world in general?
I
could tell the answer is no because he's looking up and confused and he's smiling. He doesn't have any idea.
I feel like I've learned that podcasts – we had a guest on recently, Brock Wilbur. And he said he had written an article called Podcasts Don't Matter.
Okay.
And
then he was on your podcast.
Yeah. And we brought him on specifically to talk about this for our, like, 200th episode.
Oh, nice.
We're like, we want to know why what we've been doing for 200 episodes doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
And he said the problem is so many people do podcasts, especially comedians,
right.
Thinking like, well, now I'm going to – this is my avenue and this is where I'm going to get all my – my comedy at, and people are gonna find me and love me. And it's like, no, that's
why
not,
I'm doing it. You mean
this is
this is great that I have you here because you've learned this after 200 hours. This is only like my 10th or 12th episode, so I'm really getting the so right away I'm gonna this is not gonna help me.
No, it's not. It's over.
Okay, it was over before I started. Yeah, turn off that goddamn.
Yeah, well, I didn't know
thing.
We had started recording. That's why I just turned it off. It occurred to me.
Well, I'm gonna do the intro right now.
Okay.
Hello and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I am your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is Will Link. It is kind of a generic name.
It's a good name because it's only two syllables. So it's like Will Link. Boom. Good. In and out.
Okay. You're a comedian? Stand-up comedian?
No.
You're not? He's not? You're a storyteller?
I'm a storyteller. I consider myself, I guess, a comedic essayist. I guess that's the way I would like to phrase it.
Okay. I'm only asking this question because, like I said, when I try to Google you or, you know, Facebook, I don't know where.
I'm all over Twitter, though. I am on Twitter constantly.
All right. Well, we're going to have to fix that, but I couldn't find a thing. What else? You got any kids?
No.
Got any pets?
No.
Plants?
I got a cactus that I think is half dead.
All right. He doesn't take care of things well, but that's, we're going to get on to it. First, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is Will Link. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
But I don't know anything about you.
Oh, I mean, so I'm a mystery.
No, I'm going to say this, that you're a total mystery guest, right? I heard from our friend who connected us, Alex Stein, who was here on the show
yes.
a few weeks ago, that you're not a Facebook user.
No.
And now you've become adamant about it because people are – so that's right. But
yes.
Then I also tried to look you up on Google, and I couldn't find anything.
I'm very difficult to Google because my name is Will Link.
Yes.
And if you just type in Will Link, a lot of times it'll just be like, this site will link you to.
Well, so here's what I'm here to tell you.
Okay.
You need some different kind of either branding or social media presence or something. You're right. This podcast is not helping you at all because you are a guest coming on the show. I couldn't find a thing about you.
I
couldn't prepare any questions. I mean, I'm here. we're going to have to shoot from the hip.
That's fine with me.
My guest today is Will Link. Where are you from?
I am from Long Island.
Long Island.
Originally,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been out here 11 years, though. So.
Well, you still have a little bit of your horrible Long Island accent.
Exactly. If I ever started to lose it, I'd move back immediately.
Really?
I would need to regain it. I would need to, like, spend some time, like, in the trenches of Long Island to get it back.
To get it back.
See, if anything, I feel like being out here, mine somehow has gotten thicker. Like, I play it up more now. Like, I feel like this is my thing.
That's your thing.
This is my thing. I'm the guy who has this voice.
Yeah.
So I
and
play it up.
And what do people think? Do people know you're from the East Coast? Like, on the West Coast, people say, oh, you're from...
Well, I didn't realize, obviously, on Long Island that I had an accent. So I came out here, and everyone started pointing it out, and everybody started commenting on my voice, which is weird because no one had ever really commented on my voice before.
No, why the
hell
would
they? it was a weird thing that all of a sudden, suddenly people are like, oh, you're from, or if I'd say like, oh yeah, I'm from New York, people would be like, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And how long have you been out here?
About almost 11 years now.
Almost 11 years.
And wow. I kind of love it, yeah. And I always feel a little bad about how much I love it because, you know, I'm from New York, so I'm supposed
to
be
to like New York.
It's the greatest place in the world. But, yeah, you know. And it is, but I like it better out here.
Well, you're here.
I'm here.
So when I'm here in California, you know, people say this guy is a little pushy, he's a little loud, he's a little brusque, he must be from the East Coast.
Yeah.
He's kind of an asshole. He must be from the East Coast. But when I go to Philly, people say, oh, he's so quiet, he's so shy. Is he retarded? You know, like the standard is so different.
Yeah.
Yeah, there I'm like a quiet, polite, nice guy. Here I'm kind of a dick, and I don't do anything different. I don't change a thing.
It's the way the people there see the world, I guess,
well,
in each place.
You know any of those people like from Minnesota or Atlanta, Georgia, and you know people from the Midwest?
Yeah, yeah.
You know how they have this thing about it's Minnesota nice?
Minnesota
or
nice.
Wisconsin nice?
Yeah.
You know what that is?
Yeah, I know some people from Wisconsin who I guess are quote-unquote Wisconsin nice.
Are they?
Eh.
Like, they're polite.
They're polite.
And they smile.
Yeah.
But they never, you never really get to know them.
Yeah.
You never get invited to their house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They never feed you a meal. They just wave all the, oh, hi.
Yeah.
You know, Will, oh, yeah. And then that's it. You're like, oh, okay. On the East Coast, if they don't like you, you know it.
You know it, and they lay it down on the table.
But if they like you, you really know it.
Yes, you're really embraced into the family and everything.
They hug you, they kiss you, they feed you, you know, they want to loan you money, they, you know, want to beat people up for you. I mean, they don't, so I prefer that, where if they like you, they really like you. If they don't like you, they let you know, but, you know, and it can change even.
It could. You never know.
Right? You ever have those guys that say, when I first met you, I wanted to beat the shit out of you. But you know what? You're okay.
You know, I've never had someone say that to me because how could you not love me from the start? I mean, come on. But
I had some notes, actually, when you first came in. Yeah.
But the, no, but I know those people. I've probably, although not said it, I've felt that way about some people. Probably. Yeah. Probably.
Well, I think that's healthy,
yeah.
Right? You're allowed to change your mind.
Yeah. Changing your mind is a healthy thing.
Thought you were an asshole. Now I met you, and
now I've got to know you, and you're a human being, and I've humanized
you're
you.
You're also a nice guy. Yeah. That's what my friends, my best friends, say. When I first met you, I thought you were an asshole, and now I know you are, and I've discovered that there's some good
that
things
you're
about you.
Okay.
Yeah, this show is about the dark side of comedy.
Yes,
right. Comedy Death Star. Anything interesting to you about that, or you just came for the free water?
I came for the free water and the company.
And the company. Well, you there didn't you know me. But
well, you know, at first I thought you might be an asshole, but now I like you.
No, there you go. Exactly. Yeah, what about that, the dark side of comedy? What is that for you?
Well, you know, I mean, I think comedy is probably a great way to get a lot of your... I hate when I go to a storytelling show and someone gets up there and it's clearly therapy. But at the same time, I think it's also a great way, if you can do it in an entertaining way, to get, like, deal with some of your demons and get some stuff out there.
Yeah.
And I feel like over the past few years, I've been kind of in this storytelling world for maybe like the last 3.5 years when I discovered it, which I discovered through my podcast.
Okay.
I booked Alex Alexander, who does the Pez Show.
Okay.
Great storytelling show here in Los Angeles.
Yes.
I booked her as a guest, and I didn't know there were these venues where you could get up and tell stories and read essays you've written. I didn't know about this world. And when I first got into this, I think all my stories were just these fun, weird stories from my life, and I maybe wrote them with a couple extra jokes here and there thrown in. And I noticed over the last year in particular, I feel like my stories are still funny, but they're not as ha-ha funny. They're a little like, there's a little more serious tones to dealing with some issues I might actually be having in my life and the way I've been feeling over the past year in particular.
All right,
which has
so
been a little darker.
Let's out some of that stuff. So what kind of weird stuff are you trying to push? So for me, this is an edge, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's a limit where you want to go, and if you push the edge a little bit, it's useful, it's good, and also the audience loves to see us, you know, let ourselves...
Yeah.
So what have you been bringing in? What kind of dark things have you
been... Well, I think...
What's been fucking with you that you're talking about?
Well, lately, in reality, what's fucking with me, not necessarily writing stories specifically about this, but it finds its way into it,
okay,
is I've been unemployed. I've been looking for work.
Yeah.
And it's been difficult, more difficult than I thought it would be.
Okay.
And I've been in this weird crossroads of, like, do I settle and do the thing I was doing before, which I didn't particularly like.
Which was what?
I was a master control operator at the E network.
Master control. That sounds good. You can leave off the rest of it, and we'll be impressed with master control.
Master control. All this means was I sat in a room all day, and I watched the E! Network.
Right.
I would just watch broadcasts of the Kardashians.
Make sure that it was going out propererly. And
exactly. You know, and the little flowing logo in the corner of the right commercials are airing. Yes, I would be doing that stuff.
Yeah.
And it was a terrible job, but I had a good schedule.
Right.
Which was perfect. But if I try to do this job again, I'm going to be like on overnights, and I want to. Right. I literally will want to kill myself because that's a nightmare. I've worked overnights. And I'm done with it. That's done.
So you're looking for work.
So I'm looking for work, and I'm trying to get out of that line of work.
Yeah.
And so I feel like a lot of things I've written lately are a little maybe angrier, a little rantier.
Sure.
And I think luckily, I think my rants are kind of funny. Like I think people. Or in, like
well,
when I go off
audience.
On a...
That's up to the audience. I mean, I'm starting to learn that I don't know if it's going to be funny. I don't know if it's going to work.
Yeah.
The best I can do is to be honest, and the audience will let me know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so that's true. I don't have to know if it's funny. That was a big relief to me. Like, as an actor, you know, I don't need to know if I'm a good actor or if I'm the best person. That's the producer's job. I mean, my job is to work on my technique, work on my skill, be prepared, do what I can.
Yeah.
But it's someone else's job to say, this guy is good, he should get the part.
And that's true.
Like, all right.
And everything's subjective.
That's exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done pieces that have killed, and then I've done it at another show, same exact piece, and my delivery's the same thing, and then it just, you know, for whatever reason.
As far as you know. So, out of work, that's irritating. What else? What irritates you?
Well, it's funny, on the podcast.
Yeah, what do you complain about?
We have a segment on the podcast. As I said, we talk about pop culture and stuff like that. And each week we pick an enemy.
Will and Sean.
Will Sean podcast.
Will Sean, not even ad. Will Sean podcast.
Will Got Sean it. Podcast.
Question mark. You have a question mark when you write it down?
Yes, I do. Oh, I always put a question mark.
I hear it, but yeah.
So we have a segment called Enemy of the Podcast, and in this segment, each week. I have to pick something in pop culture or maybe something from my life if it's a slow week in pop culture, and I go on a rant about it. It's this whole segment, and I build up my anger, and I scream and yell, and that's why you're the enemy of the podcast. Go fuck yourself. And I build up this rage about it. So I feel like every week there has to be at least one thing that pisses me off, whether it legitimately does or not.
Well, you find it.
Exactly. In the last episode... And this is a little dated now because the person did a backtrack of this in reality. It was the CEO of AMC Theaters was the enemy of the podcast because he had recently come out and said, maybe it's okay if we let people text in movie theaters. Maybe we should have special movie theaters where people are allowed to pull out their phones and text.
Right.
And this is the you want to know what enraged me. That's the kind of thing that enrages me. That's
the
kind
like
of thing that's...
You don't like texting in the movie theater.
No, you watched a fucking movie. Here's the thing.
Yeah,
the one thing that I really hate more than anything else is people disrupting things in a movie theater. If I were to make a list of hates,
really?
That would probably be tops. Yeah.
That's the top of your list?
Like, I mean, I've only been in one physical altercation I can remember in my adult life, and it was because I told someone to be quiet in a movie theater.
And they told you to, you know, stuff.
They laughed in my face. Mm-hmm. So... This makes me sound like a psycho. But so I asked the guy to be quiet, and he like looked at me and was like, whatever. And I'm like, hey, shut the fuck up. And he was like, and he was wearing like a little cap.
Yeah.
And I, like an out-of-body experience, I stood up and I took his little cap off and I threw it across the movie theater. He did not care for this. And he grabbed me and then I'm like, oh my God, we're going to fight. During the first reel of The Big Short.
Okay.
Like, this is bizarre.
Down.
What
We're
am
going
I doing?
Down. We're going
like,
down
and
right
I, and people like broke it up. He grabbed me and I was pushed in and being broken up. And then I just changed my seat and I watched the rest of the movie in peace. But the point is, like, that, I mean, that's an extreme example. I'm not like fighting people in movie theaters.
No, let's
usually.
Just say you do.
Let's say every time.
It works better with the,
I'm a violent man who fights people in movie theaters.
Well, everybody thinks they're nicer than they are. You know what I mean?
That's true.
I mean, because we try. We try to do our best, and so we focus on the things that are our intentions. But, you know, occasionally we, or frequently we fail. And so, you know.
Well, I think this was years of buildup. Years of asking people to be quiet and then them not being quiet. Right. And it culminated with me deciding to throw his hat.
Was he, like, a lot bigger than you?
Yes. Smaller? Well, I'm not a very big man.
And you're not very smart.
No,
you saw red, so this must be...
I saw red. This is, oh, you want to ask something about me? It's this.
Well, I'm glad you don't live in Georgia where everybody's got a gun and there's...
I thought about that, too.
He could have shot you.
I thought about that.
Or you could have just shot him for, you know...
I know.
Shot his hat off.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to be the one to carry a gun
around. No, I don't think you're going to do that. How do you deal with mistakes? Like, everybody makes mistakes. Everybody falls down sometimes. When you make mistakes, do you beat yourself up? Do you feel guilty? You say whatever. Learning opportunity for you? What do you...
You know, I'd like to think I take them as a learning opportunity, but I guess... You know, there'll be, like, mistakes I've made, like, that just... And I guess this happens with everybody, but, like, literally, sometimes I'll be sitting in my living room, and all of a sudden, like, some stupid thing I said to some girl 15 years ago pop in my head, and it bugs me. Like, and it bugs me that, like, why did I do that 15 years ago? And then I'm like, why am I thinking about it now? And then that starts to bug me. So I guess, I mean, I don't think I'm someone who repeatedly makes mistakes, except I might possibly fight someone in a movie theater again. But other than that mistake, I think I learn from them, but I'm also clearly haunted by little mistakes I've made. And they're usually, like, things I've said that were dumb, or, I mean, those are the mistakes that bother me more than anything else. I think more than even, like, major life choices that were wrong, I'm haunted by the stupid thing I said to this person, or I should have said this thing to this person at that time.
I get that sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, somebody that I know, I hurt their feelings, or something I just... Small.
Yeah.
But 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and I don't know why those things come up.
I'm still sometimes haunted by a mistake I made on my thesis film in college about, like... I kicked someone off working on it, and I did it in a really passive-aggressive way, and that still bothers me to this day. So I feel like now, like, whenever I have to deal with somebody, I actually deal with the person. Like, I'm not passive-aggressive. Like, I'll sit and I'll talk to them instead of, like, passive-aggressively get rid of them. So I feel I learned something from that, but still sometimes I'm like, man, I really... hate that I handled it that way.
So did you do like an AA thing and make reparations and call that person up 10 years later and apologize?
I don't know how to find him. I'm not on Facebook.
All right.
I'm keeping myself from... I'm preventing myself from finding him.
All right. Okay. Did you always want to be a performer? Is that in your family? Other people in your family?
No one in my family's performers. And I didn't really think of myself as a performer ever until more recently, until maybe I started doing podcasting and stuff like that. I always wanted to be a writer, and I still think of myself as a writer more. Even though I perform at so many shows around town, I still think of myself as a writer first. Before I'm writing this material, for me, it's more of a way to get my writing out there than to get me out there. And I've also enjoyed writing and commenting on the culture, which is why we started the podcast. But no one in my family was ever... my mother is a teacher. My father was a postal worker, you know. But my father really liked movies, so I'd go to the movies with him all the time. And I think that got me more in the writing and entertainment mindset.
Do you ever see, you know, Charles Bukowski?
Ever
read the post office?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not funny in that way. My cousin works at the post office, and I sent him that book, and I didn't talk to him for a while. I was going to ask you, so what are you working on? You writing something? You're always writing.
I'm always writing. It's been a little tougher writing lately. Like I said, I've been in like a funk. And I'm somebody who I realize...
This is you in a funk because you seem pretty cheerful. If you're going to be more cheerful than this, I'm really going to dislike you because I have a hard time like with perennially cheerfully people. That pisses me off.
This is the problem that I have. I think none of my friends take how depressed I've been recently seriously, because when I see them, I'm like, hey, this is great.
Mr. Pollyanna.
I think the problem is I'm a people person, and I like being around people. And the second, like when I'm at home, I'm like, man, nothing's working out. I can't find work. I don't have a girlfriend. Everything sucks. And then I see people, and I'm like, oh, thank God, people. This is going to be fun. So then nobody's like, oh, Will's not really depressed. He seems so happy.
Yeah.
But it's like, no, I'm really miserable.
Yeah.
But what I learned about myself with writing is when I was working 40 hours a week and doing podcasts and doing all this, because I also worked some freelance jobs, like I gave development notes at like the Writer's Store. I did all these things. I was also writing like crazy. Mm-hmm. The second I lost the job and I had all this free time, I wrote and have been writing so much less. And I think I'm somebody who I need to feel... You know, you hear these stories about people who, like, she
you
lived...
You need to feel shit upon. You need to feel shat upon. You need, you need the man busting your balls every day and to motivate you to say, fuck those assholes, I'm going to write some shit and it's going to make me famous.
It gives you an escape, also. It gives you an escape from the doldrum
of your... So you should take another shitty job that you hate that drives you crazy. It's good for your writing.
Well, I need any job.
I'm a life coach. This is my advice to you. You need to have a shitty job.
I think I need that kind of... I need to also be settled in some way. I need some sort of level of routine. And I think that helps me write.
Right.
And I think the problem is every time I sit down... I'm doing a show this coming weekend, and I'm like, I got this new idea for a piece. And I've barely started it, because every time I sit in front of the computer, I'm like... Well, I better check what jobs are available, and then you do that for 2 hours, and then it's like, well, now I can't write because my DVR is backed up.
All right, so what you should do to get this thing finished for your next deadline is to come to my house, clean my house, and cut my lawn, and that will really help you write this thing.
This seems like a fair trade-off.
It's a service to you. I could get anybody to do it, but I'm going to let you do it.
I will mow your lawn.
You have a deadline.
And then I will write... this essay.
That's going to work for you.
What was the original question? I feel like I didn't answer it.
That's exactly the original question, is what is the original question?
We were talking about...
I was saying, what are you writing?
What am I writing? I didn't quite answer that.
No,
I just complained.
You dodged it. It's like you're running for political
office.
You ask a question and you don't really answer. You talk about...
I'm the Donald Trump of the podcast world.
Yeah, all right.
I've got a whole bunch of ideas that I'm very excited about right now. That I have an idea for a web series that I'm thinking about that I might do with a friend of mine who I'm
comedy, horror, tragic?
I guess it would be more comedic, but I have a friend who's a dominatrix, and this kind of fascinates me, and I have an idea for a web series that might involve her and some of her misadventures. So that's something that's ruminating in my head. And I also have an idea for a script, and I haven't written a script in years.
Screenplay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I came out here, had a manager, and I was specking scripts, and clearly none of that worked out. But
or you wouldn't be here with me today.
I still would come here.
You'd be on the Mark Maron podcast. Yeah. You wouldn't be here. That's all right.
But
Or Between Two Ferns. You wouldn't be on this one with, Denzel Myers.
I probably wouldn't be on any podcast, to be honest. But... because I wouldn't have discovered this world, the world of podcasts and stuff like that.
Now you're trying to make sense. Don't try to make sense out of my jokes, man.
I'm trying to...
It's a cheerful guy that tries to make sense. Really, we're getting off on a bad foot here.
What the hell was I saying? Oh, but now I have an idea for a script again, but I'm having trouble writing it because
I'm unemployed.
I'm depressed. And that's probably part of the reason why I was more productive when I was working, because at least I'd be out in the world then. I'd be charging those batteries out in the world.
Or you need a job where you're with people. Like, that's a better job for you than a job where you sit at home. Like, as a writer, that's the hardest, one of the most difficult things, I think, is to be a writer, because you do it by yourself. Nobody gives a shit if you do it or not.
Yeah. I probably would feel, if I was getting paid more money, occasionally I get paid to write an article here or there, but if I was getting paid, like, real money... Being a writer, though, I feel like I'd feel better about going out and doing other things.
That makes sense to me. Here's a question. Clowns.
Clowns.
Funny? Scary? Friendly? What is it for you?
I'm not scared of clowns, but I've never seen the antics of a clown and started laughing either. I've never been overly amused by clowns. I guess clowns are... They're...
Okay.
I remember when I was a little kid going to, like, Ringling Brothers Circus, and I remember there being a lot of clowns, but I don't remember being overly impressed with them. I also remember my father bribing an usher to get me into the circus, come to think of it.
To get you onto the...
There was, like, a parade,
yeah.
And I was there. My father brought me and my cousins, and I remember him giving some guy money, and then we were on like a thing in the parade going around the circus. I don't remember anything other than that, though.
All right. You probably haven't thought about that for a long time.
Maybe a clown did something horrific to me, and I've blocked the whole thing out.
It could be. All right, but you don't have a big thing about clowns.
I don't have a big thing about clowns.
Do you have any rituals, like professional rituals, creative rituals that, you know, like if I sit down and work, I need to...
When I sit down to work, I can't write at, like, coffee shops or places like that. Mm-hmm. Like, I need to be home.
Okay.
If I try to go somewhere, I will just watch everybody else and listen to everybody else and not do any of my work. I have friends who are always like, hey, why don't you come with me to the coffee shop and we'll write? And I said, no. If we go, I'm just going to talk to you. Like, this is what's going to happen. And then once a friend was like, just come with me. And I said, fine. And then I drove them crazy because I couldn't not talk to them. I said, I can't sit across from someone in silence. I just can't.
So they never invited you again because you fucked up their day.
Exactly. I ruined their day. But you know what? To be fair,
they didn't believe
they
you.
Had it coming.
You told them and they didn't believe
like
you.
If someone... Yeah, you know, yeah. Listen right. to people when they tell you how they're going to be. Like, you know, I dated a girl who said she wasn't capable of love. I thought she would love me. She did not. So, you know what? That's on me.
That is on you. I think it's always on us, on you. You know, whenever you choose people, even if you say, oh, you know, why the hell did I do that? I mean, there was some part of you that really needed that or wanted that.
But when you say always on us, like... I mean, sometimes it's on them.
No,
sometimes
I don't know.
They've
I don't.
Done something like Maybe. Out of the blue that it's like, what is wait? We've made some sort of social contract here with our friendship over the years, and now you're pulling this shit. Like sometimes, I refuse to be blamed for that.
Well, not blamed, but you know, I chose this person.
That's okay. I guess you chose the person.
I chose that person, you know, and so I have to take some responsibility, even if they do self-destruct. You know, wreck my car, burn down my house. Like, wow.
Well, yeah, and I guess for people that, like...
I was
like,
here.
There are certain people I know that... Well, there have been people in my life that have suddenly surprised me, like, 10 years later, and I realize, oh, they're a selfish asshole? I didn't see this 10 years ago. Or maybe they changed. And that I don't blame myself for, but I have, like, crazy friends who... Yeah, I know if I hang out with my friend Chris... And he starts mouthing off to somebody. Well, that's... I should have known that because
yeah.
I know he's going to mouth off to somebody right. because that's what happens that's when you Chris. Hang out with him.
Yeah. Here's another question. Everybody has voices in their head, they maybe mentioned it before, that say shitty things to them.
Yes.
What I would like to know, I guess, what do those voices tell you? What are the crappy things that they tell you? And then... I'm also interested in what kind of creature this is, if you've ever kind of... Well, we're going to get into that. But, yeah, what do those voices say to you? What do you have to struggle against?
I mean, I think the thing that the voices... I think the... Because we talked about, yeah, like, shitty things that the voices will remind me of yeah. old things. But I think the thing that the voices I have to deal with more aren't, like, shitting on me because... I think 9 times out of 10, the voices in my head are fairly positive. Like, nah, you could write there, you could do this, or you could do that. But there's another voice in my head that can be much louder, which is, it's just easier to sit here, and it's just easier to, like, binge-watch Kimmy Schmidt all day, and don't do... I feel like the voice that's scariest in my head is, like, the complacent voice. And... That's the voice that had me working at E for 10 years. And now I'm out, and that's why I'm like, I got to stay out. You know,
there's
that's that
of
kind
complacency.
Of... Yeah, I think yeah. that's the most dangerous voice. Like, I can get comfortable. Like, I've lived in the same building since I moved here almost 11 years ago. Like, I go every weekend, I go to the same bar for almost 11 years. Like, I'm very... I like my routines. I like my places. Mm-hmm. I don't like shaking things up. And... Sometimes because of that, a voice will pop into the head and be like, well, why do that when it's so much easier to do this? And it's like, yeah, you're right. And then later I'm like, no, that wasn't right. I should be working harder to write this thing or go to this event or this or that, you know?
So I noticed that when you said, oh, just sit there and do nothing, your voice changed.
Yeah.
It changed a little. And so I am interested, if I'm going to ask you now, what is that creature? That the voice comes from the back of your head. There's a There's a creature.
What's the creature that makes my...
Well, yeah, it's a part of you. What is it? Do you know what that thing looks like? Just check it out right now.
Oh, I don't know. I don't... I've never put, like, a visual to it.
Well, that's why I'm asking you.
Oh. I mean...
What pops up?
I'll be honest with you. Not much is popping up.
Okay.
I don't know if that's a cop-out or if that's very telling, but when I try to visualize it, all I just still see is regular me.
Well, that's totally fine, but now I'm planting a seed, right? Because your voice changed.
Yes.
And your posture changed a little bit.
Yeah.
And so that suggests there's, a gremlin, some kind of a creature that is not just totally you. It's a part of you.
Yeah.
You don't really know.
I don't know. I don't know what that gremlin is.
All right. Well, but you could think about that.
He probably looks a lot like the gremlins from Gremlins, though, because I was a big fan of that film.
Everybody's gremlins kind of look different. So you'd be surprised what people...
Well, what have other people said their gremlins look like?
Sometimes gremlins look like them. You know, sometimes they look like a drill sergeant or a priest or, a dragon or like a little, I mean, it depends. On the
like a little, like, demon thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like the little demon thing.
You're either very well adjusted or you're in complete denial because, you're like,
I don't know. That's a good question.
I can't answer that question. That's up for you and, anyway.
Me and my therapist.
Do you have a therapist?
No, I don't.
Have you ever had a therapist?
When I was a little kid... My mother made me go to a therapist because I think she felt I wasn't handling the divorce well. Mm-hmm. But I don't even know if that's the case. I don't know whether I was just like a little kid and being like a shitty little kid or whether I wasn't handling the...
How old were you when your parents got divorced?
This
is your parents' divorce, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
my parents got divorced when I was 3. But I went to this therapist when I was like, I had to have been about like 8 or something like that.
Okay. All right.
I don't necessarily think it was, because I never remember my parents living together.
Right.
And they weren't like people who fought. They weren't like people like, I never saw my mom and dad argue about anything. Like, I never, like, I mean, I'm sure they did, but I mean, I never.
Wait, what ethnicity are you?
I'm Italian, mostly.
And you never saw people fighting or yelling at each other, screaming at each other?
Well, my
you can't be Italian.
Well,
my father's
side's not Italian.
Get out of town.
My mother's side's Italian.
I'm Italian, but I never saw my parents fight.
My mother's side.
Not this whole thing, man. You lost me.
No.
You're a cheerful guy.
Well, here's the thing.
You said you're Italian and you never saw people fighting, yelling at each other.
Well, okay.
I think you're an alien. I think that you are one of these... You know what? Here's my theory.
Yeah.
Aliens come to this planet, right?
Yeah.
And then they kind of like kidnap or suck people up for their weird experiments, and they clone them, and they send back clones.
I'm like a pod person?
Yeah, they send back clones to Earth so that we don't notice that they have abducted people, but their technology is not perfect. And they send back kind of imperfect replicas of people. And
okay.
I think, first of all,
so I'm not quite.
So I think that you're like too cheerful. Say you're Italian. Nobody's ever fought. I think you're like one of these imperfect clone replica things that is not quite an actual human being. You may not know. See, we missed the opportunity. I do a test.
Oh.
When I meet a baby.
Okay.
You know, less than a year old, maybe a year old is kind of the limit. If you put a hat on a baby.
Yeah.
What do they do? If you put a hat on a baby, the first thing you do is they take it and they rip it off and they throw it to the ground.
Okay.
Every human baby does that.
Okay.
If you put a hat on an infant, a baby, and they do not do that, alien clone.
So?
Alien clone.
If I have a child, well, it doesn't matter because I'm an alien clone, but if I had a child and put a hat on the child and they didn't take it off, I should be very concerned.
You should be very concerned.
Okay.
That's the test I always do when I meet a baby for the first time. Because I usually have a hat because
I like the image of you just going around town seeing people with babies and like, I'm going to put a hat on your baby. Excuse me, miss. I would like to place this hat on your baby.
But you have to do it judiciously.
Yes.
Because you don't want to get arrested, from strangers. But I would check it out. I would,
check out if I'm, oh.
I'm not sure now that you're an adult, the hat thing is not going to work with you, but,
Well, I'm not wearing
a hat
now.
I'm more suspicious than ever.
Saying.
I'm, anyway.
Well, with the fighting, here's the thing with the fighting. I'm saying I never had, like, a moment where they were, like, fighting. It seemed like... I guess the fighting that I see on my mother's side of the family...
These are the Italians.
Yes. Yeah. I don't consider fighting, maybe, but maybe someone else would. Like, I mean, people are yelling at each other, but it's not fighting. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a fight.
Do I know what you mean? Yes!
Yes.
No, this is... My relationship problems for me,
yeah,
this has been it. Like, I grew up in Philadelphia, a bunch of Italian people. They were constantly yelling at each other. All the time. For, you know, mad, happy...
Yeah.
Sad, sleeping, you know. And then I've had relationships with women that are from California and also are like English and other kinds of things. They get really freaked out.
Really?
And they say, why are you yelling? What's the... And I was like, I'm not... What are you talking about? We're just having a conversation here. What? This is not yelling? No, not... What are you... Are you fucking crazy? I'm not yelling at you.
Well, you know, just early in the day, my mom called me to say something about my grandmother, and I agreed with my grandma. I'm not telling my mom, what are you, nuts? What are you, nuts? And I wasn't mad at her. I wasn't putting her down, but I was just telling her, like, you're nuts to think this. It's perfectly normal behavior.
All right, so maybe there was yelling, but you didn't...
I don't consider yelling's different than fighting.
Yelling's not different from fighting. I remember there's a kid that grew up across the street from me, and, when in my 20s, I went back to visit him, and I was hanging out at his house, and his mother started telling some story about when we were kids, and he's going like this, Ma, shut up, Ma. Ma, shut up. Shut up. Ma. Ma, shut up. Shut up, Ma. And she just keeps talking, and Ma, shut up, Ma. Ma, shut up. That's totally normal. Nobody's upset by that kind of stuff. Wait, what's your father? He's not Italian.
No, he was, is. Why did I say was?
Yeah, I don't know. That's
disturbing.
Twice I said that, right? The first time...
Well, I said was with the postal workers, he's retired.
Oh, you said was the first time you mentioned your mother was a teacher. But anyway, I'm just trying to see if subconsciously you're trying to kill off your father.
I don't know. Maybe I am.
He's an alien clone. He's a human part.
He's the only thing that stands in my way from dominating the family.
What ethnicity is he?
Irish, Greek... Little bit.
All right. Something.
Bunch of stuff.
Link. What kind of name is Link?
I don't know.
It was probably something longer and he changed it.
Well, he didn't change it, but somebody might have. Maybe his father did. Or his father's father.
You don't even know?
No, I don't know much past my, I guess, great-grandparents.
All right.
And sometimes people will go like, oh, where's your family from originally? I'm like, I don't know. Like, what is so-so? I'm like, I don't know. And then they're shocked that I never, like, try to find out. Like, I don't care. I don't care.
You can do that thing now where you send your some saliva in and they do
and
a DNA test
the
and
thing.
They send it back.
I don't. I have a friend who did that. Because he didn't know who his father was, and now he's reconnected with this whole new family. But I know who my father is, and, I don't care.
And you're not going to do the thing because you want to suppress the evidence that you're actually an alien clone.
Yeah, I can't let that get out.
All right.
In fact, when those websites started, I was very worried.
All right. All right. All right, I have some other questions for you.
Lay them on me.
Let's see. As a child, you had an imaginary friend.
I did.
Your imaginary friend also had an imaginary friend. Where are they now?
I feel like they haven't moved on much in life. I feel like they're still laying low, doing the same thing they were doing. My imaginary friend was always on a swing.
Yeah.
And I feel like they just stayed there.
Tell us about your imaginary friend.
I had a friend when I was really little. I had a imaginary friend, Minnie the Moose.
Minnie the Moose.
This was the thing in my head. Yeah. And I would sing the name, Minnie the Moose, Minnie the Moose. I don't know. I was probably stealing a song from something.
Is this about the time your parents were getting divorced?
I think so.
Yeah, so you never connected those things, did you?
And there was a little moose. It was a moose.
Okay.
And I don't think the moose was gender specific, but in retrospect, the name was Minnie, so it must have been a girl, which I think is odd.
No, not necessarily.
Not necessarily, I guess.
So we can, yeah. Don't bring the gender issues into this thing. It's a very hot political button. I don't want to get any hate mail from the gender.
Gender is fluid, and goes from moose, too.
Mooses also.
Yes.
Yeah, moose.
So I had like a... But it was Minnie because it was little.
Yeah.
Maine Moose was really little. I remember it, and I just have this image of this moose on a swing.
How big? Like as big as a coffee cup moose?
Maybe this microphone.
All right, so that's as big as two coffee cups.
Yeah.
Like a 1 liter bottle.
Yeah.
Moose.
Exactly.
On a swing.
Yeah. This is what I remember. Mm-hmm. This feels like a therapy session.
No charge, no extra
charge.
Yeah,
it was that.
And so you had this Minnie the Moose, and you sang a song about Minnie the Moose, and and if Minnie the Moose also had an imaginary friend, what do you think, what kind of friend would Minnie the Moose have?
Well, it'd certainly be another animal.
Okay.
Wouldn't be a person, because that would be weird.
That would be weird, yeah.
I don't know. But it would probably, whatever Minnie's imaginary friend would be, it would be smaller than Minnie.
Got it.
It would definitely be small. Like if it was like a, if it was like Oswald the Okapi or something, it would be tiny.
Okay.
It would be a tiny version of.
So Minnie the Moose had a mini imaginary friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Right. And so Minnie today you think is still on the swing?
Yeah, Minnie didn't go anywhere.
Hasn't moved on.
Yeah.
That's fine. You know, imaginary friends.
They got nowhere to go.
All right.
They're stuck in a rut. They worked at E for 10 years.
They worked at E for 10 years. That's right. He's still there. Next question. You have a somewhat quirky sleeping ritual or bedtime ritual. What is it?
I don't think I have a quirky one, but I definitely have to... I mean, I'm one of those people who has to fall asleep with, like, noise going on. Like, I have to, like, have the TV on or something like that.
Like a marching band or parade going by, Macy's Day Parade. That
yeah.
helps you fall asleep.
I can't remember the last time. The only times I ever go to bed without a TV or something like that on is if I'm going to bed with a lady. And then I don't, because I think that'd be, like, weird. Like, okay, we're going to bed. I'm going to put Conan O'Brien on, and now we'll all have to fall asleep. No, that's the only time. And I'll tell you what, I have a lot of trouble falling asleep then. And I also, I'm not, you know, I don't know, maybe that's also clearly in the scenario I'm in bed with a strange woman. I don't know.
I'm not providing any of the answers, but so it is harder for you to fall asleep than when you're there because the TV is not on. Maybe you could just date women that talk a lot.
That would be helpful.
You ever fall asleep when a woman is actually talking to you and you just nod off?
I know I certainly have over the phone. Back in the day when people talk for hours on the phone.
Right.
I remember, like, having girlfriends that we'd be talking late into night, and then I would just fall asleep with, like, the phone on. Which was nice, actually.
For you!
Well, no, but I think she was tired, too. It's like 3 in the morning. It wasn't held against me.
She's tired, too, but you're the one who fell asleep while she was talking. I guarantee that was held against you more than you realize.
One girl, I remember, I would get really drowsy on the phone and I would start like talking nonsense. It sounded like I was drunk, but I wasn't. I was just really tired.
Yeah.
And she was like, "Why are you talking this way? It's scaring me." And I'm like, I apparently kept yelling like, "I'm on the roof." I don't know why I was yelling that.
That's interesting because the question that came up to me right before you said that was, have you ever been roofied?
Really?
Yeah, that just popped into my head. So have you ever been roofied?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, but then you said, right immediately after that hit my head, you started to say, I'm up on the roof,
yeah.
Speaking incoherently.
Maybe I was roofied that night, and I didn't know it. But as far as I know, I've never been roofied.
Okay.
There's still time.
There's still time
for someone to roofie me.
Yeah, I mean, I gave you a glass of water here. You don't
Who
know
knows? I'm never getting out of this, out of this studio.
All right. Here's an improv question.
Oh.
So you're just going to answer the thing. It's cold outside. What time is it?
2:15 in the morning.
You hear a noise behind you. You turn around. What do you see?
A dog. It's a dog.
What color?
It's black. It's big.
A big black dog.
Yeah.
And what does the dog say to you?
Well, they say he growls. He doesn't say anything. He's a dog.
So he growls?
Yeah.
Big black dog, 2:15 in the
yeah.
morning, he growls at you?
Yeah.
All right, here, I'm going to do it.
This is,
And what do you say to the dog?
I say, get the hell out of here. And then
I'm going to be the dog.
Okay.
Hey, buddy, you got a quarter?
Give me a quarter. Come on.
I don't have a quarter. Nobody carries change anymore.
Come
I'm sorry.
On.
I know. I got
You're
nothing.
You're fucking with me.
I'm not fucking with you.
Nothing.
Nothing.
You going to make me bite you?
I guess so.
You're going to make me bite you over a quarter?
I'm
going to
make... If I had a quarter, I'd give it to you.
Come
guess
on.
What? I don't have a quarter.
Who leaves the house who doesn't have a quarter?
Everybody.
What do you got?
Everybody in the world.
What do you got? You got a phone?
No. I have nothing.
That's now what? I know you're lying.
I know you know I'm lying.
Now I know you're lying.
What Here's do you want card. Me to do? What do you want me to do?
All right, let's
what
go.
Do you want me
let's
to
go
say?
To the ATM. Let's go to the ATM right now.
No.
I'm going to walk you to the ATM.
Well, I'm going to go. I'm going to go home instead. I'm leaving.
I'm going to bite you.
Well, then I'm going to bite you back.
End scene. I want to see that.
Well, that'll be my night tonight. I'll be walking down Melrose at 2:15. And...
Okay, meanwhile...
Okay.
On the other side of town...
Okay.
There was someone or something connected to this dog.
Oh, I'm supposed to...
Where are they? Who is that? Somebody that either knows this dog, is connected to this dog. Somebody would be interested to know what this dog is up to at 2:15 in the morning.
That would be the dog's owner.
The dog's owner?
Yeah. They want to know what their dog's up to. If they really wanted to know, they shouldn't have let the dog out at 2:15 in the morning.
Did they let him out, or did the dog escape?
The dog escaped, but they were pretty lazy about it. They could have set up a better system not to allow the dog to escape.
And what happens if the dog gets out again and mugs another person and gets picked up by the police again?
They're going to put that dog down. It's no good for that dog. It's the owner's fault. I blame the owner.
That makes sense to me. You ever hit anyone in the face with a pie?
No.
You never have?
No.
Hit anyone? Have you ever been hit in the face with
a pie? No, I've never been hit in the face with a pie.
Are either one of those things interesting to you?
Yeah, I think so, depending on the type of pie.
Well, yeah, let's just, you know.
Yeah, but if it's like,
I mean, whipped cream, just, you don't have to have like a whole cherry thing or, you know, or it could be even shaving cream pie. Yeah.
I'd rather get hit in the face with whipped cream than shaving cream, because then I could eat it.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I don't think that would be that bad, depending on, like, I mean, not if I'm about to walk into, like, an important job interview. Then it'd be bad.
Sure, I understand.
But if it was, like, you know, if it's, like, if it's 2:15 in the morning and hanging out with friends in the street corner before the dog gets there and you get whipped cream pie in the face, I mean, I guess that's okay.
Now I have this image of you hitting that dog in the face with a pie.
If I had a pie, I would hit that dog in the face with it.
That would be funny.
I should always arm myself with whipped cream pies.
Just, you know, just in case you're out of
You the never know. You never know.
Yeah.
When that's going to happen. That would be interesting.
Well, I'm asking, is there anybody that you would like to hit in the face with? Well, let me ask it this way. If you had permission, right, and it's not an aggressive act, if you had permission to hit some person in history in the face with a pie, right? They ask you the question if you could meet anybody in history or have lunch
with
anybody.
In the face.
Yeah, if
in
you could
history.
Pie somebody.
That's an interesting question.
Pie somebody in you know, a famous person or a hero, you know, who would you want to hit?
Oh, I want to hit someone I like? Like, it's not I want to pie in the face Hitler or something like
you.
That?
It could be someone you like.
Because that would look
like.
Kind of funny, Hitler would pie in the face.
You want to hit Hitler in the pie? In the face with a pie?
I don't know. I mean, that's my big revenge. I go back in time. I remember there was that discussion, like, if you could go back in time and kill baby Hitler.
Yeah.
My whole thing is, if you could go back in time and pie Hitler in the face, do you do it?
Would you do it?
I guess I would.
Yeah.
I would do that probably before kill a baby. Like, I would pie someone in the face. I would pie an adult in the face before I'd kill a baby. That's the line I'm drawing. That's the hill I'm going to die
when you
on.
Die and we do your headstone. I think that's what we're going to write.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you could use it as a tagline for your podcast. I'd rather hit a baby in the face with I'd rather hit an adult in the face with a pie than kill a baby.
What the question
should Nice guy. Will Lake, ladies and gentlemen.
What the question should have been, instead of would you go back in time and kill baby Hitler, apparently, the question should have been would you go back in time and put a hat on baby Hitler's head and see what
if
baby Hitler does.
Yeah, what is he going to do?
That could have solved a lot of problems. They would have figured it out. Like, oh.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Not the master race after all.
Maybe not. I asked the question about the pie because I've had this thing for a number of years where I have given permission to friends and family to hit me in the face with a pie anytime they want.
Really?
Anytime.
Has anyone taken you up on this?
A lot of times.
Okay.
20 times I've been hit in the face with a pie. And the thing that's interesting is that I gave people permission. You know, I said, and it makes everybody so happy because you don't usually have permission. It is usually kind of aggressive. So, you know, I see my uncle and my aunt, you know, most of the time they get somebody to hit me in the face with a pie. My birthday, I've been hit in the face with a pie.
You know, it's funny because I don't like messes. I'm very like neat and
I'm
very orderly.
Yeah, I can see that about you. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So you would
it's not
think,
a compliment when it comes from me. Like,
that's fine.
He likes
that's
his routine. Fine. He doesn't like to make a mess.
I'm very organized.
The hair is all nicely, you know.
Blow but
dry.
I feel
you don't
like
blow dry things.
No, I don't. I don't blow dry my hair, and I don't put anything in my hair.
All right.
Yeah, I just comb it, and then it stays. Yeah. And then when it stops staying the way it's supposed to be, I go get a haircut.
All right. But well, I just thought, you know, the alien thing, you might still be locked in the 80s somehow.
Oh, I don't understand. The pie thing, I think I would, even though I'd be annoyed, like, with somebody pulling, like, some shit and making a mess usually,
sure.
I think the pie thing gets a pass because, like, if someone pied me in the face or me pieing someone in the face, the mess wouldn't bother me because of my love of movies. And it would remind me of, like, the end of Blazing Saddles when they're like, get your pies ready for the great pie fight. Or the film but never seen ending of Doctor Strangelove where there's just a big pie fight in the war room.
Is that what happened?
That was supposed to happen. They filmed this giant pie fight and then Kubrick cut it from the film. There was a big pie fight in the war room. If there's one sequence in film history I wish I could see that no longer is available to be seen, it'd be that pie fight.
That's a tough one because the movie is amazing.
Yeah.
And it's just so well crafted. On the other hand, yeah, you kind of want to see that scene.
See pie fight.
I was just thinking the other day about, you know, you gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is a war room.
It's a war room, yeah.
I mean, that's
it's great. It's
I somehow great. Feel like a pie fight would ruin that.
Which is probably why he cut it.
Yeah, it was just too much. It tipped the balance.
I wouldn't necessarily want to see it in the film, but I would want to see it.
Right.
Like, I wish it was the DVD extra. I could see this pie fight. There are still photos of the pie fight. You know,
sure.
You got Peter Sellers and George C. Scott covered in pie.
Oh, my God.
It's great.
Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, my last question I'm going to just ask. I mean, you're wearing a Hillary Clinton.
I am wearing a Hillary Clinton shirt.
A Hillary
shirt.
Clinton
yes.
T-shirt.
Yes.
Are you really a Hillary
yes.
Clinton supporter, or are you just trying to pick up a feminist?
No. I am a
Hillary.
So I have the Hillary Clinton shirt
you're a pedant
because
and
I'm.
You are,
I am a huge Hillary Clinton supporter and have been for a long time. I mean, I voted for her in Senate in New York when I lived in New York. I voted for her in 2008.
Okay.
And I'm going to vote for her again when she becomes president.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That's my. Not a Hillary Clinton supporter?
No, I. You know what? It's hard for me.
You're a Ted Cruz guy, right?
I'm not a Ted Cruz guy. No, I don't. I'm not happy with any of the candidates that we have this year.
Oh, okay.
I mean, at any side of the aisle. I mean, I'm a Democratic voter.
Yeah.
You know, I think that Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, in a way, are talking to the same kind of people.
I agree.
People that have issues with what has been happening since the early 80s, and wages have been flat, and, you know, jobs have been leaving, and, yeah, there's a lot of people that feel like they've been left out about what's happening in this country, and that they're losing power and influence, and, you know, what their solutions are obviously different, but they speak in the same kind of language. I don't know, man. I'm just going to say this. The other day, there was a thing on Facebook about Bill Clinton. He was giving a speech, and he was, you know, saying something about Bernie Sanders. And I voted for that guy twice, Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
He was an okay president in a bunch of ways. But personally, he did some things that I just can never support him as a person. And
understandable.
I cannot stand him now. And every time he gets up on that stage I'm like, get off the fucking stage, man. Your day is done. Well, get off the stage and stop talking. And I'm just going to say this. Anytime I think about him stepping back into the Lincoln bedroom with this shit-eating grin on his face saying, it feels good to be back, it turns my stomach.
Really?
I'm like, I don't want to vote for her because I don't want him to be there. If she would get divorced from him, I would be a much happier Hillary
Clinton
supporter.
She's her own person. I mean, you can't hold the sins of Bill against her. I think what the problem he's having on the campaign trail, or I should say the problem she's having with him on the campaign trail, is he keeps trying to, like, defend the 90s, like, things in the 90s, and she tries to, like, well, no, there were mistakes made, and we're moving on, and we're trying to... But he's, like, trying to argue more for those things.
When he was the president. Yeah.
And I get that because it's his legacy, but also you're not helping anybody.
No, he shouldn't be talking about his legacy. He should be talking about her and her qualifications.
Exactly. Hey, no candidate's perfect.
No. But when people, I say, hey, I would prefer Bernie Sanders. Yeah. And people who say his goals are unrealistic.
Yeah.
To me, that is the job of leadership. Right?
To set these lofty goals and then...
George Washington... You know, Susan B. Anthony, Martin Luther King, what everybody said, their goals are unrealistic. I think on a certain level, the job of a leader is to have some unrealistic goals.
But I think an important thing is that, look, there's half the country that disagrees with you and I on things. And at some point, you have to make compromises. And I feel like Sanders is not running a campaign of compromises, which makes me think that when he gets into office, it will be that nothing will happen, and I runs the risk of even being more divisive.
We're out of time. I would like to thank our very special guest, Will Link, for coming in today.
Can I give a quick plug before I go?
Oh, you want to plug something?
Might as well. Like,
no, I would love for you to plug.
Well, besides,
something.
I've already said, Will Sean podcast. We talk pop culture every week. You can find us on iTunes. I also...
How do you spell Sean? S-E-A-N?
S-E-A-N,
okay,
yes.
Okay, this is number of...
The way God intended it to be spelled.
The Catholic God, yeah. Will Sean Podcast.
Yeah. Right. And I also host another podcast for this podcast network, The Giantist. Uh-huh. And it's a television recap podcast. I recap the show Orphan Black, which is a phenomenal show.
Great show, great show.
You can...
Does it have spoilers?
It's you watch it after you've seen the episode.
After, so okay.
So like we just the episode that came
it,
up today
it,
was about
it.
Last night's episode,
got it, got it.
And there's a book out that one of my essays is in, published in. It's a book called "Damn It, I Love You," and they published an essay of mine called "Young Ladies," which is about the time back to back I ended up dating two 21-year-old girls, and that didn't work out.
Back to back, like. Literally, they were back, physically back to back?
Back to back. They were Siamese twins.
I have to go there.
Yeah. But I did this one girl, and then I'm like, well, that didn't work out. And then I met this other 21-year-old girl, and it's just,
And at the time, you were 16? How old were you?
I was, I guess, 33.
Oh, 33, okay.
And you can follow me on Twitter if you want to know anything I'm up to, at The Real Will Link.
See, I couldn't find that. Will, two L's.
Yep.
And then Link, just like L-I-N-K.
L-I-N-K.
At The Real Will Link. Any other place when I promote the show that I could...
That's the best place. That's where most of my social networking activity takes place.
Right.
I have a big Twitter presence and not much presence anywhere else.
All right. No, that's what I'm saying. I couldn't find you. I could, but anyway. I would like to thank our very special guest, Will Link, for coming in today.
Thank you.
If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email us at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. I also had another idea the other day.
Okay.
You know how people talk about the rainbow unicorn?
Yeah.
I Googled and I found a company that sells a rainbow unitard.
Oh.
Which is, like a one-piece dance ensemble. So I'm thinking of trying to sell rainbow unitards with the Comedy Death Star. Am I the only person that thinks that's funny?
I mean, it's funny. I wouldn't necessarily invest a lot of money into this proposition, but it's funny.
You're not going to buy one.
No.
Although you would look really...
It's the kind of thing I would encourage others to buy, but I would never buy for myself.
It makes a nice gift.
Yeah.
There you go.
This is all I'm going to give. Next Christmas is all I'm going to give.
Yeah, so a Comedy Death Star coffee mug or a Comedy Death Star rainbow unitard. Okay. Let us know. We can order them. They're bespoke.
That's right. They should be made to order.
Bespoke, yes. Yeah. What else am I going to say? Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel. You have been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week. Thanks, Will.
Thank you.